We like to think of the Jefferson Exchange as something of a buffet with lots of different items to choose from. And it turns out thinking of a buffet makes us hungry. We feature a once-a-month food segment called Savor. Will Smith is our partner. He's a food stylist, which means he's well-versed in making food and its preparation and making it look good on camera. Every month, Will brings a topic, a recipe, and a guest. This month, he skipped the recipe because the guests have plenty of those. Will, welcome back.
Good morning.
Kirsten and Christopher Shockey are fermentation experts from the Applegate Valley on the web at ferment.works. Their latest book is about fermenting grains and beans. It's called Miso, Tempeh, Natto, and Other Tasty Ferments. Welcome back to Christopher and Kirsten Shockey.
Thank you.
Good to have you both here. So talk about what got you interested in fermentation in the first place, if you would.
You know, food preservation. We decided to do the little homestead thing, and you start growing a garden, and you start milking cows and goats, and suddenly you have an abundance. And fermentation is preservation. It's where it started. So, 21 years ago, when we moved to the homestead, I started out as a cheesemaker, and Christopher was making cider, and we actually didn't have the vocabulary fermentation then. We made these old school things, and now we know that those were all fermented foods.
I do love your original recipe. What is it? Veggies plus salt plus thyme equals yum?
Yeah.
It stuck with me since the first time I met you guys years ago.
That's right. That easy.
We've done a lot of ferments since that time.
No doubt. So it's gotten a lot more complex. So this has become your life. This is your day job now, right?
It is,
We're both full-time. Mm-hmm. Just doing this.
And teaching. A lot of teaching across the country and even the world.
Yeah. So some health benefits, some of which I guess have been realized within your own family. Tell us about those a bit.
Well, so each of these foods have different, they all have probiotics and prebiotics. We hear about those things now. And so for people who are wanting to change their diets and just start to eat a little more healthy, there's a little bit in it for everybody depending on what you're interested in. So we started out with fermented vegetables, and that's an easy one for some people to take. And then we went into the fermented condiments, got a little more spicy and that one. And now with the miso, tempeh, and natto, we have the health benefits of the beans and grains. A bean is a seed that doesn't want you to eat it. It wants to be a little plant.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things in those that our bodies don't do a great job pulling together. But when you ferment them first, that breaks all those things down, and they become very nutritious for us. So it's kind of
fermentation's about pre-digestion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so anything you apply fermentation to, you've suddenly got a product on the back end that is more bioavailable for our body. So probiotics aside, you've also got more availability. You've got enzymes on board that weren't on board. You've got K2 and B12 and your body's able to uptake it more because it's ready to be uptaken. So pre-digested.
Digested, it's just ready
for everybody. And it's the little guys downstairs that are doing the digesting for us. It is the microbiome.
Yeah. Okay, so the bacteria that we get inside of us that are helping us do the work. It's not us doing the digestion ourselves. Kirsten, I want to ask you about, there's a portion of the book where you talk about how you have some sensitivity to soy, but not to fermented soy.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Christopher talked about. Sensitivity is obviously different than a full-blown allergy, but with sensitivities, a lot of times the things that maybe are irritating in our system are actually the things that those fermentation microbes pre-digest for us and convert and change. And so there's a lot of people with sensitivities to gluten that can eat a fully, properly sour sourdough bread because it's changing the process. And so that's what happens with soy for me, and I think a lot of others. I mean, soy was never meant to be eaten unfermented anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those foods.
The body just doesn't know what to do with it when it gets
right. But once it's fermented, the body is like, oh yeah, okay, I know what to do with this. And you take something like, I'm going to drop the natto bomb here, but you take something like natto and you're taking a soybean.
Less than.
The first 5 minutes.
And you're adding this bacterial ferment to it, and suddenly you've got this food that cleans out your blood vessels. It's against strokes and heart attack. It it stops osteoporosis in its tracks. It leaves the basically leaves the calcium in your bones and doesn't let it get in your blood. So there's just, yeah. But that's a soybean.
why do you say the natto bomb, though? why is bringing it up, dropping the natto bomb?
Well, some people have trouble with natto. Some people don't know what natto is. And for the listeners that don't know what natto is, it's a Japanese traditional fermented soy product. It's fermented with the microbe here is Bacillus subtilis. So those of you that are familiar with like sauerkraut, right? It gets acidic. Natto uses a different bacteria, and it gets alkaline. So you get some nice coffee notes. You get a nuttiness. Think it smells like maybe a Camembert cheese or something.
Is that the gooey-looking stuff on the cover of the book?
And it's gooey.
and it's something that the Japanese culture, they eat daily and love it. And it's probably the one thing that travelers to Japan probably have the biggest problem with.
Mm. For sure.
Because they're running into this
it's a texture issue.
We joked about it when we were first really getting to know it, calling it snotto.
Yes, exactly.
Or not so much.
Right.
But it's addicting.
Yeah, I bet.
And it's one of the many reasons why when we lost Anthony Bourdain.
Yes.
That was, you know, when you look back, he really didn't like it.
Right.
And one of the few foods he really didn't like. And I had this personal goal, you know, that someday I was going to turn Tony.
You know, you're going to get Anthony Bourdain to go for the natto.
Yeah, I was. That was one of my, many reasons I was sad about that. But
it's interesting to me only because I went through a European cooking program in San Francisco, and here we're in San Francisco. I don't remember one class on fermented foods.
Not one.
And it is a really interesting and ancient, has like historical value. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
But definitely Greek for me too.
And I think for this book, it's really turned up on chefs. You know, we're getting more chefs than ever tuning into this one. I think it's because it is something that's not taught, but yet with these microbes, you can do amazing flavors, and chefs are always after.
And also, the ingredients are not expensive.
No.
That's the beauty. I feel like it's the reason why China exists, I think, because of all their fermented beans. They were able to feed their people.
Well, and if you take something like any bean and you make it into tempeh, you've got this fiber-rich, incredible protein source that costs you nothing. And environmentally, the costs are a lot lower, too.
Right.
You know, soybean or, you know, pinto bean, it really doesn't matter. You're taking that bean and just enriching it and adding all kinds of flavor on top of it.
Right.
This is our food segment, Savor, on the Jefferson Exchange. You're hearing from Kirsten and Christopher Shockey, the fermentistas that we've been talking to for a couple of years on and off. Now, their latest book is about miso, tempeh, natto, and other tasty ferments about fermenting grains and beans. Will Smith, our regular, is back here as well. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Questions, comments, ideas, recipes. Join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Will, we always talk about seasonality. You're big on eating what is available at the moment.
We're
kind of running out of things to eat off the
never.
But I mean, how does fermentation fit into the seasonality of a menu?
Well, I think that's the beauty of it. It's 365 days a year. You can enjoy doing this. I think something that I did want to say is that it's daunting. The book is absolutely beautiful, incredible photographs and a lot of information. But it is a sort of an alien topic, I think, for a lot of people. I'm personally in this new health situation where I'm really looking at my diet and such, and I have to tell you, it took me 56 years to get here, and it's taking me a long time to make these changes in lifestyle. And I just think it's a interesting idea to increase these items into your diet because good for the environment, great for your body, and you shouldn't be so scared.
Okay, that's good advice from somebody who's getting in here slowly.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the good for the environment part because that's a big part of the book. It's not just good for the body, but good for the planet.
Yes.
You guys say, how so?
Well, especially in this one with the legumes. I mean, a legume is pulls nitrogen out of the atmosphere, puts it back into the soil. And, you know, and I think with a lot of things, you know, taken to the extreme, and what we knew before is, yeah, you can also take down rainforest to plant soy, you know, for the big, but what we've been focusing on is small scale farmers who plant organic soy, non-GMO soy. And really, we had this beautiful time. We were teaching in Amish country, miso, and we had some soybean farmers, and they just happened to show up in the miso class, and we're teaching them, and they open up the Instapot, and they see the soybeans, and she said, "These look like the beans when they get caught on the combine and it rains on them." And then he picks one up, and she said, "You're going to eat that?" And he ate it, and we realized they're soybean farmers, thousands of acres. They'd never tasted a soybean, ever.
Right.
Because it wasn't human food.
Right.
And here they made this miso and they're just lit up. They're going to go back and plant.
Right.
And that's the thing, I think, is when we're in Mexico, there were farmers growing native corn, native beans. But they only grow things they can sell. So you have to start with the consumers forward and say, hey, yeah, make this amazing tempeh with native corn. And then ask the farmer for that. And so we need to stitch together these ecosystems that really feed the planet.
Right.
You know, starting with how we consume food.
So get the eaters involved first, and then you get the growers on the back end. Yeah,
with a good story all along the way. You know,
you mentioned non-GMO. How hard is it? I mean, soy is what, 99% GMO in the United States?
Yeah,
I mean, for personal consumption, because we have the internet, it's really pretty simple. We found a few places. One that comes to mind is, I think it's laurasoybeans.com or laurasoy.com. And they're a collective, I believe, of small family farms growing non-GMO soy. And you can get the small natto beans or the bigger beans.
There are three types you show in one picture in there. They're basically three general groups of soybeans. Mm-hmm.
The most common beans are a black bean, a very small soybean, for natto, and then the normal one. But, you know, the soybean is like anything else. We grew a bunch on our property that are heirlooms that are different colors. There was like ones that looked like a tiger eye. And these were all soybeans that are just not grown anymore. So like every other bean, there's, you know, hundreds of colors and varieties and flavors you can do when you're growing your own as well.
First question from a listener. Peter in Ashland wants to know, how difficult is it to make tempeh?
Tempeh.
You just made some today.
I just made some this morning. taking it down to Rancho Gordo. it's the trickiest part about tempeh is just getting your incubation system dialed in, because tempeh comes from a tropical climate. And so you're kind of wanting to create a little tropical climate. So there's all kinds of ways to keep it warm. We discuss a lot of them in the book. But honestly, my favorite way is super simple. You get a cooler. You get a fish tank heater, set it to 88 degrees, and a fish tank bubbler. You put all that in there. You put your inoculated beans in a casserole dish, and you float that on the water that's 88 degrees. Cool. Close that lid, and you've just created a nice tropical environment. And what's cool is that not only keeps it warm, but once the mycelium starts metabolizing, it also, that water cools it off. And so if you're willing to invest in those little details, it makes your life a whole lot easier. Otherwise, you're playing around with heating pads and
I noticed that part of the book where you have to try to look for the heating pad that doesn't shut off automatically.
Right.
So then I saw the pictures of the cooler and drilling into it with the spade bits. You can get the wiring in for the heater. So, you know, a little complicated, but not much. I mean, some stuff that you can find easily. And create the situation. Wild fermentation versus not wild. I mean, talk about that level of things.
So some of these foods like tempeh are considered more cultured because you are adding. Culture just means you're taking a microbial type or community and you're adding to it. Like say yogurt, right? Everybody kind of understands that yogurt. You can make yogurt with more yogurt. Wild fermentation is just what's in the air, what comes on the beans or whatever. So tempeh, and then we talk about koji, which is sort of the precursor to other things. These are both fungus fungal ferments, and so you have to get the spores to get things going.
Okay. So it's not a bacterial thing; it's a fungal thing.
It's a fungal thing. Yeah.
But I mean, they're all wild. They've all been wild. It's just how long they've been domesticated. So you make cider and you're using Saccharomyces cerevisiae, it's also a bread yeast. But that guy was wild, and then somebody found it and said, "Hey, this makes a really good alcohol." And so let's. And then we do strains of that. Same thing for these, you know, 7,000 years ago they were wild, or 5,000 years ago, and then somebody said, "This is really good," and they kept.
And don't you wonder about that moment? Oh, look, there's some moldy rice. Let's see what it tastes like. Oh, yum!
Exactly. There's a lot of trial and error there.
Yeah, I love that comedy routine about, you know, you really got to thank the people who ate stuff and died because they taught the rest of us what is safe
to
eat.
Well, it could be good.
Uh-huh. I mean, the creation story, I mean, it's back to natto, I'm sorry, but the creation story of natto is that, you know, some warrior was fighting and the enemy was coming and they were about to eat their hot plain soybeans, and they wrapped it up in blankets and drove off, and then the next day they opened up their meal and it was all slimy, and they said, "Oh, yum, this is better."
You think it was some variation of like, what do you think? Is it safe to eat?
No, exactly.
We were talking about fermentation with the fermentistas, Kirsten and Christopher Shockey from the Applegate Valley. They're online at ferment.works. They have several books out. Their latest one is called... What is it called again? Let me get in front of me. It is called Miso Tempe Natto and Other Tasty Ferments. You can join the conversation with me and Will Smith here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Miso Tempe Natto. Amazake we haven't talked about yet. What is that?
So we haven't talked so much about koji, but koji is another fungal ferment. Koji is used in products that people use every day. Soy sauce. If you drink sake, you know amazake. So koji is grown on traditionally rice, but can be grown on anything. And as the mycelium moves in, it layers in, or it uses enzymes to start breaking the food down. And then we collect those to break things down further. So amazake, you're taking koji rice, mixing it with steam rice, and you're getting pure sugar. Now, eventually, amazake is a wonderful beverage. It can be used in baking to replace sugar and all of that, but it's also the precursor to sake. It's apple cider juice to cider. You know, you add a little bit of that yeast Christopher was talking about, and that sugar starts turning into alcohol. So the interesting thing about some of these ferments, like koji, is it's really opening up the door for further ferments for the bacteria and yeast to move in.
You mentioned in the book too not to throw out your bean water, your rice water. I mean, what do you do with those?
You can do all kinds of things with those. Some people like to wash their hair with rice water. I am actually working on a vinegar book now, and I've discovered you can take rice water, add a little sugar, and also make rice vinegar. So there's the bean water people use as a like for chickpea water as a egg substitute in vegan cooking. So there's all kinds of ways to use food.
Christopher, there's quite a world tour in here. I mean, are you still impressed by how many different ways people prepare fermented foods all around the world?
Yeah, in places, we've been places where fermentation is just starting to catch on. When we were in Buenos Aires and Chile, you know, it's a meat-heavy forward and back culture, and then potatoes follow up. And if you want something that's green, it's a special deal, you know, like a special menu thing. I want a salad. But there are people in those cultures, we had full classes, they're wanting to learn these flavors. And come on, when we were in Spain, they would say that Europe kind of follows the U.S. by a couple of years in terms of, so, you know, they're kind of coming on to some of these new, and this is really kind of on edge. Mm-hmm. The Germans are fermenting again, sauerkraut again. They think that's cool as a brand new thing. So, I think it's cool that a couple homesteaders from the Applegate are getting Germans to eat their own food again, which is kind of cool.
Pretty funny. Yeah. So, Will Smith, how are you getting your feet wet as you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mentioned them earlier that in college I used to buy like small batch miso, and I do like a quick soup noodle soup because I just love that flavor of miso. Mm-hmm. And then from there I went to using miso as a base for marinades for meats and things, mm-hmm. and it really is a great marinade. Ingredient, but yeah, I did want to ask you, for someone who's not familiar, are there a couple recipes that are sort of good entry level things to try?
Yeah. I mean, we do start the book with ones that don't need any setup. Like there's dosas and injera in there.
Mm, I love a dosa.
Mm-hmm. I know, right? but it's a simple on the counter ferment.
Okay.
There's something in there that we call Myanmar-style chickpea tofu, which is super easy and so delicious and so easy. You just basically get chickpea flour, leave it on the counter overnight, and then, you know, cook it up, and it forms into this, thicker, like tofu, a little bit softer, and it's delicious. And now you're getting all the advantages of the fermentation on these beans, breaking them down, and you're still getting the fiber in your diet. And so, yeah, those are super just turnkey ferments in the book.
Just a few seconds left here. I really love the sidebar on the most badass microbe. Tell us about what that one is.
Bacillus subtilis. Yeah. Well, and like in all cases, Bacillus subtilis can, in a warming plate at a restaurant and food that's been out too long, cause, some kind of food problem. But Bacillus subtilis is everywhere. It's in us. It's a microbe that can live in outer space. It can live on every part of the planet. And when it's harnessed correctly, it makes some beautiful food for us.
So. Okay, fermented foods and many different possibilities. Christopher and Kirsten Shockey are fermentation experts. Their latest book is Miso, Tempeh, Natto, and Other Tasty Ferments. You can also find them online at ferment.works. Will Smith is our regular partner here on Savor. Thank you again
thank you.
For being here, and thank you both for joining us on The Exchange.
Yeah, thanks for having us back.